Join Willow, Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at buyer risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Well, this is Jim Fetzer, your host on The Raw Deal. This night, day of February 2024, extraordinary events are taking place both in Moscow and in Washington, D.C. I'm delighted to be joined today by Jay Wiedner, who has done extraordinary work exposing the moon landing hoax, and who has recently undertaken research on JFK with rather extraordinary conclusions, which he's presented in a film called JFK X. We're going to begin our conversation with Jay and his research on JFK at the bottom of the hour. However, we begin with the journalistic event of recent time, to wit, Tucker Carlson's interview with Vladimir Putin, which, may I say, not only drew an extraordinary audience, but ran around 2 hours. It was quite remarkable. In some ways, I was surprised because I had seen a transcript that ran, I would guess, for 45 minutes. Looked like it was divided into 3 15-minute segments. That was a pretty conventional give and take between Tucker and Putin, but which I now believe was a feint. In other words, it was a report intentionally misleading so that his actual interview would not be massively censored. It's being massively censored anyway, but I think it's too late. Toothpaste is out of the tube. Get this, clandestine tweet it. Fox News is the most watched cable network with an average of 1.85 million viewers per night in prime time. MSNBC averages 1.22 million. CNN only 582,000. Tucker's interview with Putin is over 50 million views on Twitter within the first 5 hours. The mainstream media is dead. Actually, I don't think that's an exaggeration. The viewership for the major networks, ABC, NBC, CBS, has been steadily dropping. Internet alternative media viewing steadily growing. After all the demonization of Vladimir Putin, this may have been a decisive blow to mainstream media for the propaganda that it issues. We learned, I reported yesterday, when CNN reports on the Middle East, on events in Gaza, it first clears its report with Israel. The Mossad is editing what you would hear about Israel on CNN. Here's a photograph that accompanied this, where Tucker and Putin are at a grave for fake news media. That may or may not have been photoshopped. It's certainly thematic. What before? I'm now reporting. This is a tweet I put up last night after the interview when I found I was sent a copy of the complete transcript for the authentic interview. What before was a feint to circumvent censors, I now believe. Because a real Tucker Putin interview is completely different and far more historical and detailed than its flimsy precursor. I thought Putin was masterful, and it was a professor and a student. That's how I viewed it. Tucker was absolutely astonished. He really had only slight comprehension of Putin's initial explanations about the history of Ukraine, which went back over 1,500 years of Russian history. And if you look at Tucker's intro to the interview after it was conducted, he now says they initially thought Putin was kind of stonewalling them, just using up time. But in my opinion, that reflects Tucker's lack of comprehension. The history of Eastern Europe is so complicated and virtually unknown to Americans that Putin did something very important. He laid out the historical background. And it included that modern-day Ukraine is a composite. It's a fabricated entity. It doesn't have an authentic historical existence as a nation, but includes parts of Hungary, parts of Romania, parts of Poland. Indeed, I believe that if Putin is forced to take all of Ukraine, and he reiterated during the interview several attempts he's made to bring this war to a conclusion, where they were all but set to sign on the dotted line when Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister of the UK, burst onto the scene to convince Zelensky not to do it. But where Russia has advanced, even subsequent to that, additional proposals, but the West isn't signing on the dotted line. And for reasons I'm going to explain, I believe that the Rothschilds, who in my opinion are behind this war, and even the genocide in Gaza, still think there's some way they can salvage Ukraine to become the new Israel. I'm telling you, it's out of the question. There's no possible way. Colonel McGregor has made such astute observations about the war in Ukraine, especially, including that it's over. Ukraine lost, and included were over 500,000 dead, over 500,000 dead in about 2 years. Now, you got to contrast that with Vietnam. We were there 12 or 14 years. We lost 50,000 American troops in 12 or 14 years. Ukrainians have lost 10 times that many in only two. And Zelensky has just replaced his chief of staff on the ground that he's insisting, Zelensky, that they, you know, conscript another 500,000. Well, Ukraine doesn't have it. They don't have 500,000 more troops they can put on the front line and the meat grinder to be destroyed by Russia within 24 hours. They don't have the forces. They're putting old men and young boys without any training on the front line already. Now, here I just recently, Tuesday, with Scott Bennett on his Global Great Awakening show, went through a segment of the earlier transcript of what I now conclude to have been a fake interview. Scott Bennett and I review that Tucker Putin interviewed line by line, offering our interpretations and critique. This was an historic event. Western reporters, including U.S., have all but blackballed the president of Russia, lest he dispel their demonization. Well, he did that in spades. It was awesome. Just indicate the way in which they're going after Tucker. In the wake of Tucker Carlson's controversial interview with Vladimir Putin, tensions rise as Democrats brand Carlson a traitor for engaging with a Russian president. This poll aims to gauge public sentiment on whether viewers align with a Democrat stance, questioning whether such dialogues should be perceived as treacherous or merely part of journalistic inquiry into global affairs. I click no. Of course, I disagree. And based on past experience with these polls, I expect it would have been like 97% would repudiate the Democrats' characterization. But guess what? In this case, for the first time, it wouldn't record. It wouldn't record. Simply outrageous. Meanwhile, David Martin, DC Dave, with whom I enjoy correspondence, sent. Meanwhile, the U.S. press, for the most part, seems to be largely ignoring the interview. This AOL feature from Reuters seemed to be about the only thing about it they have reported. Putin says a swap deal to free a Wall Street Journal reporter, Gershkovich, might be possible. This came up at the tail end of the interview. It was like a throwaway. It was Tucker after having actually concluded the interview. Said he had one more question. Now, it was the interview itself that was significant, not this one more question, which paled into insignificance by comparison with the rest. But that's what they're fixating on. You see, that way, they can claim to have reported on the interview, but only the parts they're willing to share with the public. The New York Post had its version of the same story. Putin claims deal could be reached for imprisoned Wall Street Journal reporter Evan Gershkovich in rare interview with Tucker Carlson. But I guarantee 100% that wasn't important in comparison. Russia's Federal Security Service alleged that the reporter, under instruction from the U.S., collected information constituting a state secret about the activities of one of the enterprises of the Russian military-industrial complex. Gershkovich and the Journal deny the allegations, and the U.S. government has declared him to be wrongfully detained. Russian authorities haven't released any evidence to support the espionage charges, but it appears to exist. Putin was very calm, as he was entirely throughout the entire interview, saying they had him red-handed, where he was covertly obtaining classified information, which Putin even added is the textbook definition of espionage. They nailed the guy. Putin, I am 100% certain, isn't prevaricating here. He's not making this up. That is a stock in trade of the American media, the CIA, the American government. Here's another attempt to spin it. Vladimir Putin pulled a classic power move, steamroller Tucker Carlson. This is ridiculous. And by the way, here, when these are reporting on the Tucker interview by these more or less mainstream outlets, they're running ads that I think are intended to put off readers. The one on AOL Reuters had a lengthy Tampax commercial, right? I mean, it goes on. Well, most guys aren't real enthusiastic about Tampax commercials. But I think they were deliberately used. Here in this case, they ran a propaganda piece claiming the Russian military is low on ammunition and equipment. It's war on Ukraine. Well, the reverse is the case. The Ukrainian military is low on ammunition and equipment, and it's war with Russia. Russia has munitions galore, tanks galore. They're at full production. The U.S., it would take 2 years to beef up, and so far as I can tell, we haven't even made any effort to do it. We're virtually out of ammunition. Ukraine is on the ropes. So I just threw that in for good measure. More propaganda. Tucker Carlson said Vladimir Putin was a couple hours late for their Kremlin interview this week, making people wait as a power move often used by the Russian president. Putin launched into a lengthy revisionist history of Russia that Carlson said annoyed him. He did say initially he found it annoying, but I think there was an excellent reason for it, because the West just doesn't understand this complicated history. More here. Carlson's interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin could see the conservative pundit targeted. In other words, they're going to go after Tucker. Tucker Carlson risked bogus prosecution under the Espionage Act for interviewing Russian President Vladimir Putin, one legal expert warns. Carlson, a former Fox News host who remained popular among conservatives. Hey, he's popular. He's the most popular by far among Americans generally, is set to interview Putin. He confirmed in a post on X, formerly Twitter, Tuesday. He said he's interviewing Russia's leader because most Americans are not informed about what's happening there, and that is his duty to inform people. I agree with that. Here's how they go about assailing it. But the interview has brought a backlash from critics who have in the past accused Carlson of promoting Kremlin talking points during the Russia-Ukraine war. In other words, if something is true about the war, but it's unfavorable to Ukraine or to the West because they're losing massively, and the objective reporters, Colonel McGraver, most notable among them, has reported, then, of course, that's supposed to be a Kremlin talking point. This is embarrassingly bad. It's the American anchors of the major networks who have talking points, not Tucker. Most Americans have no idea why Putin invaded Ukraine or what his goals are now, Carlson said in a video posted to X. They've never heard his voice. That's wrong. Americans have a right to know all they can about a war they're implicated in, and we have a right to tell him about because we are Americans too. Impeccable statement. Carlson has taken a risk by interviewing Putin, lawyer Ian Kazin said in a video posted to X on Wednesday, with his analysis drawing some pushback. The guy's a hack. He said that while interviewing Putin may be legal, there may be some big problems ahead for Carlson, pointing to the super broad language of the Espionage Act, which prohibits Americans from spying on behalf of foreign countries. Spying on behalf of foreign countries? What kind of bullshit is this? Carlson warned that the language of the law could be construed to prohibit any sharing of information with another country with intent to harm the U.S. What was Tucker sharing? Tucker was asking questions. Questions are neither true nor false. He was simply asking questions. He wasn't sharing information with another country that could, with the intent to harm the U.S., or does he mean information about Russia with intent to harm the U.S.? No, with intent to inform of the American people. Carlson sharing questions with Putin's team before the interview, or Putin's team providing the American with evidence supporting the war with Ukraine, could be covered by the Espionage Act, Corzine said. But he explained why the case for prosecution would still be weak. Does Tucker Carlson have an intent to harm the U.S.? He asked. This is where the espionage case against Tucker gets weaker. And it gets even more weak when you consider that the U.S. government is duty-bound to follow the dictates of the U.S. Constitution. The Constitution guarantees freedom of the press, and the U.S. Supreme Court has done everything it can to protect this provision in journalists. and I'm now qualifying my opinion. What Kozin is saying here is totally reasonable. He also said Carlson has ultimately taken a risk that he could be prosecuted later on in time on bogus charges. Absolutely. And this, by the way, was in Newsweek, which reached out via email to the Tucker Carlson Network and Corzine for comment. Corzine's analysis has gone viral, amassing more than a million views by Thursday. But critics argue the interview will be covered by the First Amendment guaranteed freedom of the press. Devoutly to be wished. Jay, if you are here, Jay has stepped away. I'd love to get your comments on all of the above, Jay. I have more to add, but I'd love to get your thoughts. Did you have a chance? Did you watch the interview?
Oh, yeah, I watched it. Oh, yeah. The reason that they don't want you to see Putin is because you'll start comparing. And I wish we had one politician that even had 3/4 of the intellect that Putin has. And Americans' brains were melting because they are used to 45-second answers. And this guy gives a 30-minute answer on 1,000 years of history that we in the West are completely ignorant of. And I really wonder if we haven't been so dumbed down by the media that we can't appreciate an intelligent person anymore. That's what I think. And I was blown away. Sorry.
So was I. I was in awe. I mean, his intellect was so vast, his knowledge so detailed and profound. There's no one in the West, anywhere in the West, who can compare, Jay. And American politicians are little pygmies. They're little midgets. They're mental munchkins compared to this guy.
Absolutely. And he did that on purpose. He wanted to show us how frigging intelligent he is. And all of our leaders have had conversations with this guy in the past. So they know how smart he is. The reason they don't want him around or anyone to see him is because of that. Because now we know that we cannot outwit this guy. No way in the world can we outwit him. This guy is in the upper 180 IQ, something like that. I would not want to play chess with this guy.
Yeah, I'd pay him close to 200, just as do you. He's got to be perhaps the most intellectual world leader ever on the stage of international geopolitics. I mean, I can't think of anyone who comes remotely close.
Nobody. There's nobody. I mean, he is so far in first place, we don't know who is in second. I'm trying to think, maybe Kennedy could have stood in the ring with him. A little bit Clinton, but
Jack could have had intelligent conversation with Putin, yeah. But Putin's knowledge of history far exceeds that of even JFK in my estimation, Jay.
I'm so thankful that interview took place. I can't even begin to express it.
Yeah, I was in awe watching it, and I was interacting and being interviewed about it immediately, and that that was my reaction. Let me kick in some reports from ordinary American citizens, by the way. Here is, I was sent this note too. I just watched this interview, all of it. When I went to copy the YouTube address, the whole thing had disappeared. We are mushrooms, oligarchs, and neocons, and we know what is fed to these plants. Shit. I'm not sure that most of us, a country less than 300 years old, can grasp European culture. Putin speaking in that context of Carlson is like a wise father speaking to his adolescent, ignorant child. It was a great interview, very impressive. See the comments, one of which I copied below. Get this. From a J. Roberts. I put my preconceived notion of opinions aside. If I put my preconceived notions and opinions aside, I cannot help but recognize that President Putin is exquisitely articulate, highly informed, unabashedly patriotic, and apparently obviously sincere. Meanwhile, my country's president is a pathologic serial liar who does not know his ass from a lemon. He cannot speak intelligibly. He cannot even find his own way to the stairs. And when he does, he pulls up them. He has no patriotism, no sincerity, no integrity, no morals, no conscience, no understanding of history, and apparently no bladder sphincter control. In addition, he is a filthy, perverted, hair-sniffing pedophile whose own FDAP son calls him Beto Pete in his phone contacts. I won't bother listing Hunter's problematic, perverted characteristics, since they are clearly a result of my president's lack of parenting skills, and they would take hours to itemize. This interview is absolutely fantastic. We all owe a huge debt of gratitude to Mr. Tucker Carlson, not merely for the amazing long-form interviews he produces, but also for helping to expose the matrix-like stranglehold American journalism has endured under the thumb of governmental and corporate entities for far too long. Much respect and gratitude. Let me add, well, I copied a whole lot of comments that were excellent. What's happened in Washington in response is stunning. 17 GOP senators voted to advance a $95.3 billion Ukraine and Israel aid package without the controversial border provision Republicans have rejected. They acted immediately, Jay. I think it's because this interview is going to change the attitude of the American people. So they're going for broke now while they still can. So for that security help, we'll be right back.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Hey, everyone. It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
join Revolution Radio every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Jay, I just find it all outrageous. And what you have is the Zionists are going all out. We know our media is controlled. We know that our Congress is Israeli-occupied territory. I think they may have seen this as their last opportunity to abuse their position by sending vast sums again to Israel and to Ukraine. For in the one case, a war that's already lost, in the other, for a war that should never have been fought because this slaughter of Palestinians is unconscionable, and the United States, by providing the weapons that are being used to slaughter the Palestinians, have made ourselves complicit. Even Biden said about attacking the Houthis and Hezbollah, that because Ukraine is providing the weapons and support, Ukraine is ultimately responsible. The same thus can be said of the United States. By providing the weapons and the support, we are responsible for slaughters in both cases. I mean, 500,000 dead Ukrainian soldiers, eh? And you know, the whole idea is to murder or evacuate, get the hell out of Israel, all the Palestinians. Your thoughts about all the above, Jay?
Outrageous, man. I saw a video today of the Palestinians showing up at the hospital to sort out who died and who didn't, and from the bombing from the night before. And I started crying. I was really, really, really heartbroken. Yeah, and, you know, weirdly enough, you probably know this, Israel and Ukraine are actually linked in history. People don't know that. But the people that live in Israel were Khazars. And Khazaria was where Ukraine is. And it was called they were called the name stealers, the Khazars were. Because you would have to pass through Khazaria to get from the east to the west, and you would get there, and then they would frequently drug you and steal everything you have, including your name, and then go and make the deal that you were going to make under your name. And they were well known for it. And finally, in 780, I think, the Russians said, "We're done with you," and they came down and destroyed them. And I was wondering if Putin was going to get into that. Actually, I was on the edge of my seat for most of the time because he didn't get into that part. And I think that's wise, because it would have been over the heads of everybody. But yeah, so the thing is Israel's got a lot of problems. Not only do they have antagonistic neighbors, but they don't have any water. They're running out of water. They've used up all the water in the land, and they're not going to be able to grow food soon. And so I think they're looking at the breadbasket of Europe, and we've already pledged to rebuild the whole place. And I think Putin sees that, and he's like, "Nope, I'm not letting this one happen again. We had it happen in 1917, and that's it. We're never going to let it happen again." And he's adamant about it. He knows his history. He knows what's going on. You know what's going on. I know what's going on. So I think that this thing is reaching ahead right now. I really do. I think Israel's and Ukraine are both coming, and I think this interview is going to push it over the top. And I think that Zelensky better start eyeing his estate in Florida, because he's going to need to go somewhere very soon. And yeah, it's a crying shame. 500,000 people have died in Ukraine. Just freaking outrageous what's going on right now. Outrageous. And the fact that we are funding it. And let me say one other thing. I'll tell a quick story here because I want everyone to understand where I'm coming from. I moved to Colorado in 2012 to get a job. And I decided at that time that I was actually going to register as in a political party. So I registered as a Republican, thinking that the Democrats were already taking over. Maybe there's a chance we could reform the Republican Party. I never received one piece of literature from the Republican Party in 6 years. No, 4 years. It wasn't until Trump got into the presidency that I started receiving correspondence from Republicans. They never asked me for money, never asked me for anything, nothing. I fully expected to be hit up like every month for money, right? And I wasn't. And I was like really perplexed. And finally, I called up the head of the Colorado Republican Party, and I got her on the phone. This is in 2016. And I said, how come you guys don't ever correspond with me or ask me for money or anything? It's just really strange. It's like you don't exist. And she said something to me casually. I said, you know what I think? I think you're a fake party. That's what I think. And I do. I think it's a fake party. I think that the payoff of Carrie Lake to try to pay her off to not run, that was probably Mitch McConnell, by the way, powerful interest back east. I think the Republicans are the Washington Generals and the Democrats are the Harlem Globetrotters. That's what I think. I think they're the designated losers. And when push comes to shove, what do? They side with them. Look at that bill they tried to pass, the immigration bill. Oh, my God. That was insane. And I think we're really dealing with a complete mafia that's taken over. And the only way to, and apparently, as much as I would not like to say it, it looks like Trump actually was in some opposition to that mafia. That's really starting to look like that now. And we reach that point, Jim, I think we're going to have a civil war. I really do. I mean, I don't know.
I think a lot of us share those sentiments, Jay, especially that the present day occupants of Israel are Khazarians, a descendant of Khazaria, as you observe. And I believe that the reason the war in Ukraine has taken place is because of a desire to turn Ukraine into the new Israel, that the Israelis would move to Ukraine, which has historically been known as a breadbasket of Russia, but actually in many ways a breadbasket of all of Europe because of its highly successful farming, some of the most fertile land in the world in Ukraine. But where Putin explained how he was forced to intervene. I mean, it wasn't his choice. But after the coup of 2014, which he didn't mention her name, but was engineered by Victoria Nuland using $5 billion of your and my taxpayer dollars.
One of the most evil people that's ever breathed.
Yes, I agree. To depose the Russia-friendly president and install a Western puppet, immediately they began shelling the Donbass, which is ethnically Russian, Russian speakers. You know, Tucker, I was surprised, wasn't sure what Putin meant about denazifying Ukraine. I thought Putin was very deft in explaining. But these are Nazis in a stereotype sense, Jay. You know, I mean, these are monsters, and they're bloodthirsty, they're sadistic, they're vicious. They murder prisoners, you know, without thinking twice about it. They subject them to massive torture and all that. Here they were bombarding the Donbass, and it was when Ukraine was on the verge of an invasion of the Donbass that Putin intervened. He couldn't put it off any longer. And I think he's a great hero myself, not only to the people of the Donbass, but actually to the whole world. But you see the power of the Rothschild, the Zionist influence on our media, on our Congress. You know, it was Cynthia McKinney in 2011 on Press TV who revealed the pledge, namely that every new member of Congress is asked to sign a pledge to put the interests of Israel ahead of even those of the United States. and virtually every member of Congress signs. Years ago, a friend of mine asked me, did I know how many members of the then current Congress had refused to sign the pledge? And when I admitted I did not know, he held up one finger of one hand, one member of Congress. Yay! We've been sold out. And I think this vote now is a reflection of how much we've been sold out. All those people deserve to be removed and replaced. Get them the hell out of Congress because they represent Israel. And of course, Colonel McGregor, in one of his latest reports about Ukraine, observed the U.S. doesn't have a foreign policy. That what we're just doing what Israel wants us to do. He was talking, too, about, you know, Palestine, but it really applies to both. That, in essence, and I've been making this point myself for some time, if you consider Bibi Netanyahu to be our commander-in-chief, then all the pieces fall into place. And if you consider George Soros to be our president domestically, open borders, lock, law enforcement, corrupt attorney, you know, district attorneys, wokeism, all that, that's a Soros agenda to destroy America, which he prays will happen before he dies. Jay, we're in a hell of a plight.
Well, yeah, the problem for them is that, and they know this, is that all of the rogues and rebels, intellectuals, criminals, and psychopaths all came to America from the rest of the world. And so we're like a really special people. We don't have, anyone who's well-traveled knows that we're really special here. We got a weird quality about us that nobody else has. And not, it's not pretty. I'm not saying we're great. It's not pretty at all. But we have this quality. And the quality is, you know, F you, you know. And they can't handle it. They can't handle it. And so now they're flooding us with all these people because they have to diminish us in every way they can. It's what the trans movement is. It's what the everything that's been going on for the last 40, 50, 60 years actually started at the end of World War II, 1947, with the creation of the CIA. As how many times did Putin say CIA yesterday? I don't know, 30, 35 times, something like that. He was clearly identifying the bad guys. And they're not all bad. I've talked to CIA people, and some of them actually think you and I and what we say is actually cool and right. But the vast majority of them are, like you said, they're under the thumb of this power that no one can do anything about. And the thing is, I'm going to say this because I think it's important. Looking in to the religious aspects of the people in Israel, we see that their Bible is bullshit. And it's been completely mistranslated. What the Bible that we think when we read it is God is actually the word Elohim, which means a group of people. So a group of people came here from somewhere, probably from Earth, and created all of this bullshit. And the the Secret Bible, I think it's called, by Mari Buglino. All about the how it's all been mistranslated and everything and how all the religions are just based on BS and it all came from the original religion. And so at this point in time, they're going to try to create a Messiah soon here. I guarantee it. You know, I know it sounds completely crazy, but they're going to create some kind of world leader who's going to have so much charisma, they're going to put all their media behind it. And he's going to, they're doing their takeover right now. You know about the book, The Great Taking? It's a book about how, by this Wall Street analyst who's probably in his late 60s or so, and how they're, you don't really even own stock, he says. He says that, that any time that the owners of the stock want to call it all in, they can. And so if you think you own $1 million worth of stock, he says you don't. He says they changed the rules like 30 years ago. And so now all of it is moving together for the great takeover of the planet. in which we're all going to be slaves unless we say no. And we need to say no. We can't let them have the digital dollar. We've got to close the borders. We have to put back the law enforcement agencies as they were before. Yes, they need to be reformed. I agree. They were faulty. But if we don't stop it, then I think the people that are going to be in charge are going to be very, very cruel. And we're not going to like it. And we have a chance to stop it. I don't know. It's ironic because, as I show in my film JFKX, that's what Jack and Bobby were doing. Jack and Bobby were going right up against these guys. Bobby said, put the clip in our film, the mafia has taken over our government. Bobby Kennedy said this in 1962. So, you know, it's not like this is new. It's not new. And Bobby, especially Bobby, because I really, after making JFKX, have come to really respect Bobby Kennedy. Bobby Kennedy was a bulldog, and he after these guys, the criminals that were taking over our country. And then after the Kennedys, nobody's ever looked into the mob or the mafia ever again. And then they just, as they show, as Coppola shows in the Godfather movies, they just went corporate. They stopped with the Tommy guns and they just went corporate. And they compromised people with movie cameras and video cameras now. Instead of having to kill them, all you have to do is compromise them, get them in a situation where you've got them on tape doing something very, very bad. And then now you control them for the rest of their lives. And that's how they've been doing it since Meyer Lansky came up with the idea in 1951. So this all, so every city has a compromise house with cameras. All the judges, police, politicians are all compromised. Every one of them, I guarantee it. I received an anonymous letter about 9 years ago in my P.O. box, not my personal email, but my personal mail, but my P.O. box. It was a 10-page typed out letter from a guy, and apparently I was not the only one who got it. You may have even got it. I don't know. But it was about a judge who was dying of terminal cancer, and he had meetings every week for 3 hours at a coffee house with like six or seven guys who could take notes, but they couldn't record it. And he just let it all out. And in this 10-page letter, he said, all the police forces are compromised. He says, every politician is receiving hundreds of thousands of dollars a year in tax-free money on the side. All the judges are receiving the same. He would not talk except that he was dying. He only had like 60 days to live, so he didn't care anymore. And he said in this thing that the police, they know before they get out of their car how much money you have in your car, how many weapons and where they're located, and all the drugs and everything. So they know they have some kind of device that can scan your car and see everything. And so we have a mafia, and we have to extricate it from our body politic, or we're going to die of political cancer. And it has to be now. And unfortunately, it has to be us. And I don't want it to be me. I just turned 70. The last thing I want to do is fight in some damn war, you know?
I agree with so much of what you just said, Jay. And of course, it's a Khazarian mafia we're talking about. This isn't a convention. This is an Italian group. This is a Jewish instrumentality that's taking control of America. And I wouldn't be surprised if everything that judge were reporting was exactly true. God knows my experience with the judicial system has been disillusioning in the extreme. When I had the law and the facts on my side, yeah. And yet I couldn't get the time of day. I couldn't get a modicum of justice out of the system. I mean, it's just outrageous. Now, Jay, we agree on so much, and yet you have done this film, JFK, where the basic theme that Jack faked his death is something, you know, I rejected. What, of course, interested me was you even were citing the third of my first three books on JFK, The Great Zapruder Film Hoax, where I brought together the six best experts on the film. We had a conference on the Duluth campus of the University of Minnesota, which was financed, by the way, by the University of Minnesota. They actually funded two conferences while I was there. The first in 1999 in Minneapolis on the death of JFK, where I brought together 20 or 30 experts and then selected the very best for murder in Dealey Plaza. And before that, I had published Assassination Science, 1998, about basically a lot about the medical evidence. You know, Charles Crenshaw, who was a physician in trauma room number one when JFK's moribund body was brought in, gave me diagrams of the throat wound and the blow up to the back of the head. David Mandick, MD, PhD, who turns out to be the leading expert on the medical evidence. Bob Livingston, world authority on the human brain, also an expert in wound ballistics. The basic autopsy reports there. You got, you know, there were several, oddly enough, but most stunningly, the Bethesda, which describes in massive detail this huge blowout at the back of the head that extends all the way to the top of the head, which is which was built upon or intended to, you know, distort the finding of the Parkland physician that he had a fist-sized blow at the back of the head caused by a shot that entered the right temple. In DJ, two wounds were widely reported on radio and television the day of the assassination. A small, clean puncture wound to the throat. The bullet turned out to actually have passed through the windshield en route to its target, but were Malcolm Perry three times during the Parkland press conference held after Malcolm Kilduff, the acting press secretary, had announced that JFK was dead and said it was a simple matter of a bullet right through the head while pointing to his right temple. Explained this bullet was coming up three times. He described it as a wound of entry. It would turn out in some of the autopsy reports that wound has been completely reworked, and it appears Commander Humes used information he obtained from Bob Livingston, who was a scientific director of two of the National Institutes of Health, located in Bethesda across the street from the Bethesda Naval Hospital, what it would look like if it had been a wound of exit instead of a wound of entry, and he appears to have changed it, just as enlarging that wound, Jay, was done by Commander Humes using a cranial saw, but he did it right in front of two witnesses, one of whom was the mortician who would eventually prepare the body for funeral, Thomas Evan Robinson. I mean, it's just stunning when you get deeply into this. Now, what I'm reporting here may or may not be news to you, because you focus on frame 313 of the Zapruder film, where we have the apparent blowout, and believe that it was a faking of blood, gore, whatever, using a Hollywood technique. Why don't you elaborate and tell us how you got into this and arrived at those conclusions and whether you maintain them to this day?
Well, first off, I just want to say that I've been following your work on the JFK assassination for a long, long time, and really wish I could have gone to the Zapruder film symposium that you had. But what happened to me was that about 10 years ago, someone on the internet, I believe it was from Oliver Stone's camp, released the full enhanced Zapruder film. It was only up on YouTube for about 6 weeks. And then it went away. And I found it. And I watched it. And it was, you know, really well done. It, you know, super enhanced. And I saw, you know, I saw no blood from the neck wound at all. I saw Kennedy clearly coming from behind the freeway sign and putting something here on the side of his head. And then I saw Jackie come around and they were facing each other. And I saw her, you know, do something with their hand. But what I also noticed is what you noticed in your book on the Zapruder film, was that after the strikes at 212, there's a shift. There's a shift in the whole thing. All of a sudden, the people all disappear. There's only like six or seven people now, even though this is the height of the parade. And there's like a color balance shift. You can see it. If you, especially me, I'm a film guy. I know how I used to do color balancing. And there's a color balance shift, as you report. And that's seriously important because the film after the splice has been run through an optical printer. There is no doubt about it. The people in the background that are there are as big or bigger than the people in the limousine, and that's impossible in optics, the laws of optics, that's impossible. The people that are further away from the lens are always going to be smaller, period. No one can argue with that. And then when every time that people watch JFKX, when that point is made and shown, that you can hear an audible gasp in the audience. Like they go, whoa. And I really owe that to you, Jim. And the other thing is that no one's reacting to gunshots. As you point out in your book, no one reacts to gunshots anywhere. No, none of the bystanders, none of the people, not Zapruder. Nobody reacts to gunshots. And I got to tell you, as a person who has many guns, a 30 caliber is going to make some serious noise. It's going to be in a cavernous place like downtown Dallas. It's going to boom all around the buildings. Everyone's going to hear the first shot. They're going to all drop to the ground. There's nothing scarier than bullets whizzing by your ear, cutting through the air. It's the scariest sound ever. And nobody reported hearing that or anything. And
Jay, hold that thought. We got a hard break. We'll be right back with Jay Wiedner talking about his film JFKX.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, and we'll be right back after this message.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
That the Capitol will ever treat us fairly. You are lying to yourselves. Because we know who they are and what they do. This is what they do, and we must fight back. You can torture us and bomb us. Fire is catching. And if we burn, you burn with us.
Good evening.
Are you awake yet? I hope. We've tried and we've tried for years and years to use passive resistance and loud voices to make a change. But time is over. Your governments around the world have no other goal than to decimate your entire existence. At the hands of the bankers and the elites. The war is coming. And it's your choice to decide if you want to be a warrior or a victim. Denial is not a choice anymore. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Not giving up. Revolution Radio.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Jay, of course, over the break, for those who see the video version of the show, but obviously would be unaware or listening to the broadcast, I played the Zapruder film multiple times. This is the enhanced version by John P. Costello, who's the leading expert on the film. And, you know, he corrected for pincushion distortion and aspect ratio distortion. And, of course, we were observing then, as you're observing here now, that the film was processed using authentic original footage, would then run through an optical printer. We could combine any foreground with any background. And you're correctly observing, when they brought in the background, they didn't take into account the perspectival issue that would have had the bodies in the distance smaller than those in the foreground. I mean, your point's impeccable, Jay. But, of course, that's part and parcel of our analysis in the great Zapruder film hoax. But yeah, you're completely right about that. Now, I don't know if you're aware of how extensively the film has been edited. For example, that frame 313 is a composite frame, that they're merging two different shots. He's hit in the back of the head and he slumps forward. And this is confirmed by witnesses in Dealey Plaza, but also, because there's another film, there's a non-edited version. I know six people who have seen the non-edited version. Some have seen it as many as three times, Jay. And Jack's hit in the back of that. He slumps forward. Jack eases him back up. She's looking him right in the face when he's hit the right temple by the bullet that blows his brains out the back of his head. And then he just slumps to the left. That violent back and to the left we see in the version is a function of removing too many frames. But what they also did, Jay, was to black out the blowout at the back of the head so that it occurred to me they spent so much time blacking it out early on that maybe they'd overlook you could actually see the blowout later. And I found it in frame 374. You can see the blowout. And Larry,
my contention is that the body in the autopsy is not JFK.
I'm not talking about body in the autopsy. They did a body switch. We know. Yeah. Dennis David, look, Jay, I've had the opportunity to talk with Dennis David, O'Connor, these guys who were there in the autopsy about this directly in Dallas over coffee or drinks. I mean, Gerald Custer was a radiation technician who actually took the x-rays, and I had extensive correspondence, and he went through the testimony of the radiation officer who was only acting. The regular guy was away, and I think it's because he would be compliant and the regular guy not. And I said, just redline everything he said that was false, and virtually everything he testified to the Warren Commission was false. Dennis David, who was the NCO, is responsible for checking who went into the morgue and not, reported that he had a body there of a major he was ordered not to log in. And I'm convinced, and the photographs, you believe, are not JFK, they're the major. They use a different body in some of the autopsy photographs. In fact, I think possibly more than...
But it could be the major. It could be a switch.
Well, Jay,
this is really important. And I know that you're probably one of the few people who understand what I'm about to say. When the CIA was created, the premier intelligence agency of the United States was the Office of Naval Intelligence. The CIA came over them. And that really pissed off ONI. Okay? And there began a war between the CIA and the ONI. And Kennedy operated the PT boats, which was operated over Office of Naval Intelligence. That's what they were. They were intelligence gathering boats. And that Kennedy commanded. So he was ONI. There's no doubt about it. And I believe that Kennedy was put into office by ONI to root out what the hell was going on. And Bobby was the bulldog. And he was sent in and he discovered that the mob and the CIA had married each other and become one. And he and Jack just like absolutely was furious, as you know, about this. And I believe that, yes, Jack faked his death because he had gone too far. He did not know who the beast really was, how strong it really was. And ONI assisted him in it. And Bethesda is the hospital that they insisted that Jack be taken to because it was operated by ONI. And I believe ONI assisted Jack in getting away and out of the scene because they felt bad for what happened. And the only other president that we've ever had who was also ONI was Jimmy Carter. And he, when he got in office, he put Stansfield Turner, Admiral Stansfield Turner, in charge of the CIA. And as you probably know, he promptly fired about 400 people in the CIA in the Halloween night massacre, incurring the wrath. And then these people went rogue with Ollie North and those guys. That's where they came from. And so we've had two presidents who actually tried to go up against these guys. And a total of what? Jimmy Carter lasted 4 years and JFK lasted 3 years. And then that's it. You know, every other president is under the gun of these guys. And I identify them in the movie. It's Sidney Korshak and the Chicago Mob. And we know from Gus Russo's book, Super Mob, who these guys are. They're the Khazarian Mafia. That's who they are. And that's who... Joe Kennedy, Jack's dad, that's who he hated more than anybody else. He hated those guys. He just hated them. He would go on rampages about Meyer Lansky and all these guys and how much he hated them. And so I believe that it was both Joe Kennedy and ONI who instructed John to go in there and root out what was going on. John rooted it out. The bravest president we ever had. And he said, holy crap, guys, we got something here that it's too big for me to handle. And and I believe that as far as any white hats, people are always saying white hats. You know, I don't know if there are white hats anymore, but there were white hats. Then they were in the ONI. And I don't know if they're still operating anymore or they've been taken over or destroyed or whatever. I hear they're still going, but I believe that's what happened. I want to say one thing because I know my time is short here. after they did the movie, I started thinking about what evidence the Warren Commission had that convinced them that there were three shots that day. And I found out, as you probably know, that it was a radio left on a motorcycle policeman. And the Dallas police headquarters recorded the whole thing, supposedly. And so the Warren Commission listened to that and concluded there were three shots. Well, I got that audio clip after I did the film and listened to it, and I couldn't hear any shots at all. I heard horns honking and people and all that, but I didn't hear any shots. And I was quite mystified by that. And I even put it on an audio software to see if there was any spikes, and there were no spikes. And so then I delved deeper into it, and I found an FBI report from 1980, not like we could trust the FBI, but from 1980 that said that there were no shots on that piece of audio at all. So I have ancillary evidence that there doesn't seem to be any shots fired that day. The other thing about it is the whole, and I think you'll appreciate this, as a filmmaker, I can tell you that, first off, if I was an assassin, I wouldn't shoot anybody in the open like that, ever. It would not be the way I would do it. I would do it as quietly and privately as I possibly could. I would not do it. There's a certain showbiz thing about all of these events. That's what you have to look for. There's a certain showbiz event about Sandy Hook, a showbiz thing about 9/11, a showbiz, you know, thing about the Kennedy assassination. If you start thinking about it, it feels like showbiz. It doesn't feel like the Boston bombing, as the ad that was on the Boston bombing. It doesn't feel like it's real. And it just feels like it's all staged. And I believe it is. And I believe that a lot of events are staged. And you know, and I know what your troubles that you've gone through because you have been exposing all of this fakery. And when, so about 7 years ago, I decided that I was going to find one event, and I was going to examine one event. And this event was an event that occurred in Hollywood when I lived there as a screenwriter years ago in the 1980s. It was a famous event for about 4 days, and then it was wiped off the news. And it was a massacre. I'm not going to say any more than that because I don't want to get sued. And I started looking into this massacre that happened in Hollywood in the 80s. And the more I looked, the more I saw, there weren't any death certificates. There weren't, I couldn't find anything. And this one single event that I just picked randomly to look at, all of a sudden, after about 18 hours of examination, looked like it was completely false. And I thought, why are they doing this? And it has to be some kind of trauma-based mind control, is my final conclusion. And that they're faking events that are really grotesque and wild and bloody, and put all the graphic images up so we can all see it. And it's, in most cases, not real. And I'm not saying that there aren't real shootings and killings. There are. But and by the way, I made JFKX because of the trouble that you and other people got into. And I said, no, that's not true. They've been faking events for a long time, and I'm going to prove it. And I'm going to continue to prove it in my next two films. I really want to deconstruct reality and show the world the fakery fuckery that they're doing to us. And I can tell you this: when I was making JFKX 9 months ago now, I went to Variety, the showbiz magazine, and I looked to see what other productions were going on about the JFK assassination being the 60th anniversary. And there was none. There was none. I said, we're safe. We don't have any competition in this film. Nobody's making a JFK assassination film. And then our film came out. It's on Amazon Prime, by the way, and Vimeo. When our film came out, within 2 weeks, there were six different productions going into effect that were on the JFK assassination, which are all out now. I mean, there were super fast productions. They're on Netflix. They're on Hulu. They're on Vimeo. It's like I've never seen, even on the 50th anniversary, they didn't, as you know, they didn't really do anything. In fact, they've never really, the major media has really never covered the JFK assassination at the anniversary. I don't ever remember them covering it. Not at the 40th, not the 30th. They just kind of ignored it every year. We, us people, we knew about it and we talked about it. Oh, remember where you were when JFK died? But the major media has always been against the Kennedys. I'm sorry, they've always been against them. They put out documentaries every 5 or 6 years after the JFK thing, trashing JFK as a womanizer, that he had mob ties, he hung out with Frank Sinatra. And I never saw one good documentary about the Kennedys after the Kennedy assassination. And so the major media has always had it in for the Kennedys, I think. And they have it in for RFK Jr. too. So my point is that the there's something on the side of JFK's face for two full seconds in the Zapruder film. What we did in JFKX, what I think is so brilliant, is we took that version that you just mentioned of the Zapruder film, and we ran it through that software that they used to enhance old films. You know, you take World War I films and you run through the software, and it looks like it's shot in 4K, 24 frames a second, all the scratches are removed. And that's what we did with the Zapruder film. So this is really the highest quality Zapruder film that's ever been produced. And and there's no brain matter on the trunk, even though John Connolly says that there was brain matter. You can clearly see no brain matter anywhere. There's no blood from the neck wound. There's no blood from the head wound. I mean, there should be blood everywhere. Jackie should be covered in blood. The whole front seat should be covered in blood. A neck wound is the most vicious wound of all. It cuts right through the soft matter, and all your arteries and veins are here. He should have been shooting it out. Blood should have been shooting out from that wound. But his hands don't even have blood on him. When he's up here, like, there's no blood anywhere. And I'm sorry, but as a guy who did physical effects in Hollywood, including squibs and explosions and trying to fake violence on screen, it's a squib. And here's what's going to happen. Somebody, hopefully somebody like Quentin Tarantino, who knows his squibs like nobody, is going to watch my film and go, that's a squib. And that I do believe that's going to happen. Just like when people watched my Kubrick's Odyssey, the Hollywood technicians went, that's a front screen projection. That's what they all said when they saw my film. That's why I had to make a film of the Kubrick stuff, because I wanted people in the film community to see the actual film and see how fake it is. That's why I put the Zapruder film in, because I want people in the film community to see that film and say, there is something wrong with this film. And then they can go and backtrack it and do what you did and what I did and see how it's been monkeyed with. And it's shocking. And Time Life should be Time Life committed a treason. There's two splices in the film. They never told the Warren Commission there was any splices in the film. We don't know who did it. We don't know why it happened. They won't cop to any of it. They didn't even admit it until 1967 that the film had been spliced. I want to know the name of the guy, why they did it. And they're getting away with this, and nobody outside of you actually has ever called them out on this bullshit. And I really do. I want a presidential murder is a never ending crime. It cannot. There's no statute of limitations on it. We should demand a hearing to find out what Time Life did with this film. And get exact details. I guarantee it's going to be complete and utter bullshit. Complete and utter bullshit. And you know, I could go on. There's this woman. She has a really popular website or a YouTube channel. She's a mortician, believe it or not. And she did this incredible video about the body and what happened to JFK's body on the day. And it was Jackie that's pushing them to leave. It's Jackie that's saying, we got to get the body onto the plane and leave. It's Jackie, she says, is constantly pushing everybody to get going. It's Jackie who said, no, you're not doing the autopsy here. It was Jackie insisting that everything gets moved. And I know it sounds crazy, but she says, and I'll link to this, I'll send you the link. She says that when Jackie got to the airplane, Air Force One, she told LBJ, let's go. And he said, no, Jackie, I got to take the oath of office first. So even Johnson was slowing down Jackie. Jackie wanted out of there, and there's reasons why. And because she's complicit. And I believe that the stories that we heard over the years of JFK being ensconced on Scorpios Island, owned by Aristotle Onassis, are true. And I believe he died in 1967, and that when they exhumed his body in 1967 for unknown reasons, they put the body in the grave. That's what I think happened. And I think also this woman, this mortician woman, shows that they had two caskets. They had one casket for transporting JFK from Dallas to the airplane, and then they bought another casket for the funeral, two separate caskets. So why would they need two separate caskets? Because they had to get rid of the other body. There's another body that isn't JFK that has to be gotten rid of. And, you know, it might be this military guy you're saying. I contend in the film that it was J.D. Tippit, because J.D. Tippit, the policeman that Oswald shot that day and killed, because he killed two people that day. Most people don't know that. He was called JFK on the Dallas Police Force because he was a dead ringer for JFK.
Well,
I believe.
Well, he wasn't a dead ringer. I mean, look, I got his JJJ. I got Tippett's autopsy report, okay? He doesn't look anything like JFK lying there on the slab. It cannot have been J.D. Tippett. I tell you that definitively. And as far as Jackie, this was a Lyndon operation. This wasn't Jackie. Jackie was in shock, for God's sake. You know, she testified. She testified to the commission, and they excluded it on the grounds of privacy, but it's because it refuted their official narrative that from the front he looked just fine, but that she had a terrible time holding his skull and brains together at the back of the head. And by the way, the reason you don't see the brains on the trunk is they cleaned it up. When they edited the film, they cleaned it up. They blacked out the blood at the back of the head. I got reports from Secret Service agents who were with a car when it was flown back to Washington and were nauseated by the brains on the trunk, Jay. They were nauseated. They cleaned up all the evidence. Listen, you're missing the big picture here. The original was taken to the National Photographic Interpretation Center on Saturday, and they created briefing boards for all the shots. That was a 8mm that had been developed in Dallas, brought there by one team. And a second film. Jay, I'm telling you. Look, Jay, I don't know.
Who processed that? We don't know who. I tracked it down. I don't know. We don't know who processed it.
Jay.
That's the problem.
Jay, you're a perfect example of, in this case, a little knowledge being a dangerous thing. You got some things right, and you have grossly misinterpreted others. There were eight shooters there. Lee Oswald was in the doorway when the book depository, when the JFK motorcade came by. He didn't shoot Tippett. Two men shot Tippett. There were two different makes of ammunition there, and they had automatics that rejected. Oswald had a revolver, and witness after witness reported hearing three or four shots. If you look at Cover Up by Stuart Gallinor at the back, he's got a record of how many witnesses reported how many shots. Only three shots were fired with an unsilenced weapon from the Daltex by an anti-Castro Cuban by the name of Nestor Tony Escadro. He was actually firing from the window of a broom closet for uranium company that was an asset for the CIA, and George H.W. Bush. Well, of course you can, for God's sake. The shot to the back. Jay, listen. This is, well, this is.
I mean, you can put one on there, but it's not going to work because by the time the bullet has reached the velocity, the full velocity, it's all right on a handgun, but
Kenny,
the long barrel.
Kenny O'Donnell's and Tom Powers, two of Jack's closest friends, said it was a turkey shoot. Their bullets were whizzing all over the place. But they didn't. They didn't testify that way, because they wanted the Kennedy family wanted to put it behind them. It was a fact. Listen, Jay, I have identified.
And why didn't the? And I appreciate that you're debating me, by the way, because I think this is a great conversation. But why didn't anybody in the car react to the high velocity bullets flying around him?
Because they were in on it. The Secret Service. The Secret Service set him up, for God's sake. They were in on it. The Secret Service set him up, Jay. Did you not even watch? You've not even watched The Men Who Killed Kennedy? Nigel Turner had me in my group in the 7th edition where I laid out 15 indications of Secret Service complicity in setting him up with it. 15. And that included gathering the x-rays before they were developed, and the photographs from the autopsy. And the next time we see them, they're altered and fake, which is some of the stuff that, in my opinion, misled you. But, I mean, look, Jay, I think you're a good guy. But in this case, you've been misled because you haven't got deep enough. There were 8 different shooters in Dealey Plaza. I've identified 6.
Why
name, rank.
That, Jim? What? Yeah, but wait a minute. Why would you do that?
Because if you didn't,
easy to take him out at
Jay,
any point.
Jay, you haven't thought, you haven't, you have not thought this through. Because if he, because, let me answer. Because if they didn't do it in public, everyone would think for sure it was a conspiracy. They wanted to do it in a public way where they had control. They had FBI all over the place, like Mary Mormon and Jean Hill were immediately apprehended by the FBI, and they took her photographs and all that. They were telling her when Jean said, she was asked how many shots, she thought 4 or 5, and he said, no, there were only 3. They were emphatic. They had their cover story in place before the event took place, Jay. Listen, I'll be right back with Jay Wiedner. I'm going to play the ZipRooter film a few more times. I'm looking at some of the medical evidence. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Management would like to take a moment to thank the listeners and hosts for all their support that has made Revolution Radio one of the biggest platforms for free speech in an ever-growing dark world of censorship. Unfortunately, this platform for free speech has never been free. We need the support of the people. It is the people like you, yes, you, that keeps the station in the front lines of the battle against tyranny and oppression. Please help support Revolution Radio so free speech will not be silenced in a world that seems to be going deaf to the real truth. With your support, we will be able to become an even bigger pillar of light in a dark world.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the planet. Revolution Radio.
Revolution Radio, every Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern Time. on Studio B for Momentary Zen with host Zen Garcia at freedomslips.com, the People Station.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job, that Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, Jay, of course, as you know, I've been playing the Zapruder film during the break. And the reason they took out that from Houston turning on to Elm Street, they took that out because William Greer, the driver, mistook a frontage road in front of the book depository for Elm Street. And he swung out too widely, nearly hit a concrete abutment. He had to pause and get back in line. And I think they felt the public watching that would lose confidence in the Secret Service that they didn't know any better. Now, what you're unaware, what I'm sure you don't know, because there are even many students, other students at JFK who are unaware, there was a second stop. Jack had been hit in the back by a shot fired from the top of the county records building, 5.5 inches below the collar, just to the right of the spinal column, only went as far in as the second knuckle on your little finger. In fact, this bullet would work its way out at Parkland, and it would be found by Sam Kinney, who was a driver of the Secret Service limousine, who had a bucket of water and a sponge. He found the bullet, and he took it inside and put it on a stretcher. He confided in a neighbor, but said, you know, don't reveal this until after my death. And the neighbor respected that. But this means when Oliver Stone did his sequel to JFK and unfortunately relied upon a fellow named Jim D. Eugenio, whom in my opinion is a limited hangout and a very bad source, they talked all about the magic bullet, but they didn't even expose that we knew where it came from and there was nothing magic about it. And of course, the claim of a bullet entering at the base of the back of the head, and to get neck, in order to get there, they had to elevate that shot 5.5 inches below the collar to the base of the back of the neck. That was done by Gerald Ford. It's not even anatomically possible to exit the neck because cervical vertebrae intervene. So while they interviewed David Mantic during the sequel, they didn't include his most important proof about the magic bullet. He'd taken a patient with chest and neck dimension similar to Jack, created a CAT scan, and then plotted the alleged trajectory of the magic bullet to prove it's anatomically impossible. Now, they also had Doug Horne. But once again, Doug Horne, who was a senior analyst for military records for the Assassination Records Review Board, who's probably a 5-volume set. Let me grab one of them. Five volumes, and they're all this thick. It's massive. About all the medical evidence and all that. I mean, this is as thorough as it gets. Where it was Doug Horne who discovered the swapping out of the original for the edited film at the National Photographic Interpretation Center on Saturday and Sunday. And as I was starting to explain, Jay, the film brought down on Sunday was a 16-millimeter unsplit film that had been developed in Rochester, where the CIA has a secret photo lab called Hawkeye Works. David Lifton was the first to discover that. And the camera uses a 16-millimeter film, but it only films one side called side A, 8-millimeter, and then you take it out, you flip it over, it does side B. So if you're going to play the whole thing, you would have to splice it together. Now, what Lifton also confirmed independently of Josiah Thompson was the double hit theory, to wit, Jack's hit the back of the head at 212 and he slumps forward. And then, as I said, Jackie uses him back up, looking right in the face when he's hit in the right temple by the bullet and blows his brains out the back of his head. David now believes, by the way, there was a third shot to the head, to the side of the head, fired from the vicinity of the pergola that hit him at the same time. And he has a more than one book out about the JFK head wounds. You can get them on Amazon. They're very thorough, very detailed. One of the faults I had with your presentation was you repeatedly show the back of the head as it was depicted by the House Select Committee on Assassinations. What they did was reconstitute the back of the head. You know, you would have thought there was no blowout there, but there was a huge blowout there. And as I say, if you go to the Bethesda autopsy report, it's described in detail. I mean, it's the whole back up to the top. It's just enormous. David Lifton, when he discovered this, and I highly recommend his book, Best Evidence. I think it is the single most important book ever published on the assassination. He called up an MD of his acquaintance and just read the description of the wound and said, "What's that sound like to you?" And he said, "It sounded like someone was hit in the head with an axe." But as I said, Humes actually did that using a cranial saw in front of Thomas Evan Robinson, who had become the mortician, you know. And
isn't it Lifton who pointed out that there were two caskets brought to Bethesda?
Well, yeah. David was on to that. Let me explain, Jay.
Exactly.
The
goes right into my theory.
J. Well, yeah, you got bits and pieces. It's just the way you put them together that is mistaken. That's all. Look, I respect what you're doing, Jay. I'm saying, if you got deeper into the evidence, you'd recognize that those pieces have a different significance than you've attributed to them. You've read Assassination Science, Murder, and Dealey Plaza, great. So, but have you met JFK, Who, How, and Why, my most recent Who, How, and Why?
I asked my wife. She knows how many JFK books I have.
And you know about the second limo stop then? Because
I do.
Larry.
I want to ask you something, because you're the guy. Something has really troubled me ever since I made this film, in that I thought I heard it from you years ago that LBJ ordered the limo destroyed. But everybody's telling me that the limo is up in Michigan somewhere at a museum.
Not destroyed. Rebuilt, Jay. Rebuilt.
So it wasn't destroyed, it was rebuilt.
Yeah, but they destroyed all the evidence. They had to rip down to bare metal, replace the windshield, which had the through-and-through hole in it. Doug Weldon, J.D., tracked down the executive at Ford to replace the windshield and confirmed a through-and-through hole, and it was from the outside in because the beveling was on the inside.
I understand. So my here's my thing, is that I actually really appreciate all the work that you've done and everybody, Lifton and everybody, and I salute all of you for being really brave people and coming out and doing this work when everybody was against you and everything. But I am an expert in film technology, and especially technology at around that time. And there are certain things that you just couldn't do in those days, not without leaving a lot of evidence on the film itself. The other thing I want to point out is that as a filmmaker, what filmmakers know that nobody else knows is that there's certain things you have to do before you do a shot. And you have certain setup things that you have to do before there's a shot. And there's certain things that you have to do after the shot that you do. That if they happen in real life, that's a trigger for me saying that this might be bullshit. And I pointed out at the beginning of the Zapruder film how everybody is spaced out. This is the downtown Dallas at 12:30 at lunchtime, and while there's thousands of people greeting the Kennedys everywhere else they go, when they come into Dealey Plaza, you can count the people in the Zapruder film. It's less than 120 people are there. And the way they're spaced out is exactly how filmmakers space people out when they're trying to make it look like the crowd is bigger than it is. That was the first thing I noticed. Is like, wait a minute, that's exactly what I do when I'm making films.
You want to? It's not downtown Dallas, which was jam-packed. I mean, I could go through all this with you, Jay. It was so bad, they were 8-10 deep. There was even a bus on the motorcade route that there were an assassin with a handgun could have taken out Jack. But you mentioned, by the way, 30 caliber. I don't know where you came up with 30 caliber. The Mannlicher Carcana was this obscure Italian 6.5-millimeter carbine. The shot to the back was to implant a Mannlicher Carcano bullet using a larger caliber weapon, a .30-06, and a sabot, a plastic collar. That was fired by Harry Weatherford, who had, by the way, obtained a high-quality silencer for his weapon just weeks before the assassination. But we can go into all that. I just want to share with you a little bit about the key aspect of your argument, which concerns the blood splay in the moment. I mean, John P. Costella, I don't know if you watch his tutorial. Here's supposed to be the speed of the limousine, which is all wrong. They're not supposed to go slower than 30 miles an hour, but they actually were going closer to here it showing 10 or 9 or 8 miles an hour. These frames about 313 were published in the wrong order in the Zapruder film. Lifton noticed this and wrote to J. Edgar Hoover, acknowledged that they changed the order of 14 and 15 to minimize. Now, here's the double hit I was explaining. This is diagrams. This is a diagram from Josiah Thompson's book, 6 Seconds in Dallas, where you see the forward motion from 312 to 313, and then we have the back and to the left. Here you can see a graph, all steady motion, then 312 to 313 forward, and then the back and to the left, which, of course, we see so dramatically in the film. Life actually broke the plate twice when they published this. The first frames from the Zapruder to which the public had access were published in Life. Most were unremarkable, but this one, frame 313, posed special problems. The plate was broken twice to revise description 6, which appears to be unique in the history of publishing. There are many indications this and the other films have been edited, including the all but motionless spectators, the driver's head turns twice as fast as humanly possible, and the blob and blood spray, which appear to have been painted in. Blood and brains across the trunk and the driver pulling to the left and bringing to the vehicle to a halt had to be removed because it was such an obvious indication of Secret Service complicity in setting up JFK for the hit. Now, as you well know, every color can be broken down into red, green, and blue light. Graphs show the spray, this is from the 313, completely disappears within 3 frames. That's at 18 frames a second. That's a 6th of a second, which isn't physically possible. If you dropped a lead weight from JFK's temple, it wouldn't drop into the car that fast. The scientists were also able to show the spray could not have been moving so fast that it shot out of view before frame 314. Here's more. You're right about the clean, clear trunk, but that's because they cleaned it up. Here's more, Jackie. Now, look here how the back has been blacked in, Jay. Do you see how black that is? There's a group of Hollywood film restoration experts who have a high quality version of film, and I've seen it's unbelievably good, and they're embarrassed by how shabbily this was done. They appear to have taken these little frames, blown them up, painted over in black by hand, and then shrunk them back down to repeat. Here's 312.
I want to say one thing. The quality that you're showing here is very low quality. We show a much higher quality film in JFK X.
Yeah,
this is
okay.
Very low quality.
That's okay. The points I'm making don't require that. Now, this is 312. This is before he's been hit in the back of the head or the right temple. Here's 313. This is, of course, one of the various versions of 313. Now, 314, they've already blacked out the back of his head. We have this thing called the blob that you've been fixating on. Here you can see it here. I think actually that was moving like the blood at the back forward to make it look as though it came out the front of his head. It moves around a lot. It's obviously not a natural occurring feature, but an artifact that was added to the film. So here through 317, they blacked out the back of the head. Now, I told you before.
Exactly like a squib.
Yeah, it does resemble a squib, but it was artificially added. Jay.
The plate even rolls up. Jay. You can see it glistening in the sun.
Jay. Yeah. Something's wrong. You just don't quite get what was being done there, okay? I mean, what was being done was not a squib. It was moving around this feature of the head. Now, look here. 347, it occurred to me maybe they'd overlook that you can actually see the blowout at the back of the head. And I found it in 347 when Jackie is climbing back. Here's a close-up. Now, that pink thing, that's a skull flap that was blown open. But here is the blowout at the back of the head. Blue matter, right? How often brains are described as blue matter. Now, there's a little hair hanging over it. But take a look. My suspicion, those involved in reconstructing the whole movies, including the Zapruder film, might have overlooked frames past 313, 317 that display the wound to the back of his head. I found this image in the blowout in frame 374. So here you have before, this is like 312, and this is probably 316 or 17. See, they tried to fake it as though the blowout had occurred at the front of the head when it was completely at the back, Jay. And even Zapruder was in on it because he went on television that day, Jay, and he was asked where it was. And he said, he put his hand up to the right front, but there was no blowout at the right front. It was the back of his head. So, you know, if you want an instant proof that Zapruder was in on it, that's it. Now, David Manning has studied the x-rays, and he had told me before going in that he thought that there was something wrong with the x-rays because the contrast between black and white was too great. And he used a technique from physics called optical densitometry to establish that this area called area P at the back of the head, this is the lateral cranial, the right side of the skull x-ray, had been created by using material far too dense to be human bone. So unless Jack's head was nothing but solid bone, unless he was a bonehead, this was an artifact. They may have done it by exposure to light to create the same effect. But when you put area P together with what I discovered in 374, there's a very close approximation, except for the hair hanging over the top of the head. Larry Rivera discovered Jackie's glove also shows you where the indentation occurred. I mean, this was a brilliant piece of work on his part. Where you see the hole in the skull. I mean, it was just massive. And here you can see the blood again. He did this with a 3D, it's called Blender. This is just, by the way, to show how we know the film was edited. They took out the Zapruder sign. Apparently, there was a hole in it. And when they put it back, they put it back in the wrong place. Take a look here, Jay. You'll see where the sign should have been versus where the sign shows up in the Zapruder. It's in the wrong place. Now, there's here you're talking about the spectator. Yeah, all everywhere else they're cheering, they're thrilled and everything. But here, it's like they're motionless. You know, they're not reacting. And that's because this portion of the foreground was taken before JFK and Jackie arrived. It was taken when the pilot car passed by, and then using optical printing, it was added in. So we get that effect you've talked about. Here's an external inconsistency. Jack, in relation to the Zapruder, Clint Hill, in relation to the Zapruder, never makes contact with Jackie. But in the next film, he makes contact with Jackie, and he said, of course, that he pushed Jackie back in the car. So here's how you have it in the Z film versus the Knicks. They're not consistent, even though great efforts were made to make it happen. We have all the witnesses to the head wound. These are in Dealey Plaza, Beverly Oliver, the Willises, Ed Hoffman, then at Parkland, McClellan, Peters, Salyer, Carrico, Delaney, Crenshaw, even at Bethesda. They had the blot. There's Gerald Custer, Ball Connor, Floyd Reeby. And this is, of course, Clint Hill talking about witnessing that blowout. Here it is. This was in the Kennedy Detail, published in 2010. I'm astonished they let this sentence remain. And slumped across the seat, President Kennedy lay unmoving, a bloody gaping fist-sized hole clearly visible in the back of his head. This was McClellan giving a diagram. He didn't draw it, but he approved that of the back of the head. I told you how Charles Crenshaw done for me. These are in Assassination Science, by the way. That's the back of the head, the blowout from the side and the back. Here is Thomas Evans Robinson's description of the wounds. Large gaping hole in back of head, patched by stretching piece of rubber. He believes the skull was filled with plaster of Paris. There was a smaller wound in the right temple. Then there was that crescent-shaped flap down. That was the pinky's flap. Approximately two small shrapnel wounds in the face. He had to pack with wax because they were leaking embalming fluid. David brilliantly inferred those were tiny particles of glass in his face when the bullet passed through the windshield. The wound in the back, 5 to 6 inches below the shoulder, just to the right of the backbone. The adrenaline gland in the brain had been removed. Other organs were moved and put back. No swelling or discoloration to the face, meaning he died instantly in Dealey Plaza. Now, here's what you were showing, Jay. This is from the House Select Committee, you know, and in that you can see in the diagram they claim to have a hole there, but not in the photograph. But they reconstituted the back of the head. So here's the major anomaly at Parkland. We have the fist side blow at Bethesda greatly increased. And then the HSCA tried to do the whole thing over. And let me just observe, if I have it here, oh, these are the physician at Parkland talking about cerebellar as well as cerebral tissue extruding from that wound. And where the cerebellum is this compact part of the brain at the base. And that the brain shown in diagrams and photographs in the National Archives cannot be that of JFK because he had half his brains blown out. So, you know, among the many alterations they made, these are fake autopsy report photographs. I agree with you. Robert Groden has spread these around, but they're phony. You're 100% correct about this. Here, you compare the profile. Yeah, they're different. It's not JFK. Here's another. I think I have one where you can see a superposition. So you're right about there being autopsy photographs that are fake, Jay. But it doesn't mean it's because Jack's alive and well and living on Scorbius Island. It's because they wanted to conceal the true causes of death, obfuscate. They were going to claim only three shots from above and behind. When he was hit, actually, if David's right, 5 different times in the back, 5.5 inches below the collar to the right of the spine, in the throat, that shot fired through the windshield. Then in the back of the head from the Daltex, he slumped forward, Jaggies and back up. He's in the right temple, blowing his brains out the back of the head, but also if David's right, the side of the head at the same time. So, I think you're completely sincere. I certainly don't question your believing the theory you've advanced. But I think, Jay, if you were to dig a little deeper, you'd find the pieces fall into place and the idea that Jack fakes his death. I mean, in my opinion, that's absurd. That's, Jay, let me just say this and then I'll turn it to you. It's absurd on its face. The Kennedys were stand up. Jack wouldn't run away from a fight. It was an elaborate conspiracy orchestrated by Lyndon Johnson, CIA, Joint Chiefs, Mafia, anti-Castro Cubans, Eastern establishment surrounding the Fed, Texas oilman Mafia, and Lyndon. That's 8 parties, 8 shooters, each of which fired their shot. I can prove the existence of all 8. I've identified 6, in terms of their location, the shot they took, the effect, Oli Damigar VII, with which I agree, the only one we haven't identified, and he has to have been the Fed shooter, was on the grass opposite the knoll. There's a single tree there, Jay. I have seen photographs from two different JFK experts of him standing with his rifle, two different photographs. There was a shooter there. He's the only one we haven't identified. The floor is yours.
All right. Well, you know, we can respect each other and disagree. I just want to point out that JFK definitely does this motion right after the Stemmons Freeway sign goes by and sticks his hand up here on the side of his face, and then he brings it down, and there's something there when his hand is removed. The quality of the Zapruder film that we have in JFKX far exceeds what you are showing us. And I did that on purpose because I wanted to actually see the film, because I was so frustrated by those bad quality Zapruder films that were everywhere. Even the good ones weren't that good. And so we went out of our way to make sure that we have a highly enhanced Zapruder film. And I don't believe in coincidences. And there's something there on the side of his face for two full seconds between the time that he does this motion and the splat. And another thing is that when you're, I don't know if you hunt or not, but when you shoot something, there's not an explosion. When the bullet hits flesh, there's not an explosion. Or maybe on the other side as it comes out, there's an explosion. But if you shoot somebody, it's going to be a little hole. You know, it's not going to be go boom. Only in Hollywood do bodies explode when they get hit by bullets. So I don't know. You know, it's just as a filmmaker, I can tell you that everything that I would want to do to make it a fake is done. It's all that I would want. Very few people. I thought the Secret Service backed off away from everything so no one could see what was going on. I would want all the witnesses have all their films taken from them immediately. I would
Jay. It's a fake film.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Join me and the Brian Ruse Show on Revolution Radio, Eastern Standard Time, every Tuesday night from 6 to 8. We talk about the four most vital things, in my view, affecting all of humanity. Number one is UFOs and aliens and their agenda for the advancement of humanity. Number two is the Jewish establishment's control over all aspects of human civilization. Number three, the truth about Adolf Hitler, how he was the opposite of what we've been told. Number four is Advanced Ancient Global Civilizations. Join me on The Brian Ruse Show, Tuesday nights from 6 to 8 on Studio B on Revolution Radio.
Industrial Complex podcast here on Revolution Radio, Studio B, every Wednesday, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Get fit, empowered, physically, mentally, and spiritually.
My name is Mr. Rowe. I am the host of Reality Extraction. On Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, I utilize logic, intellect, and magic to methodically autonomize, vivisect, analyze, examine, study, scrutinize, and extract an essence of reality from a fog of illusion and confusion.